Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Blitz, Black Box Diaries, and Merchant Ivory.
I'd like to start off today by talking about a film called Blitz, which is, that's B-L-I-T-Z, named after the Blitzkrieg, the German bombing of England, of London, back during World War II. And this is the new movie from Steve McQueen, who both wrote it and directed. He is a black British director who's done some very important work in the past, a really excellent film called Hunger back in 2008, very political film. His most famous movie is probably 12 Years a Slave, which came out a little over 10 years ago and won the Academy Award for the best film of its year. More recently, he made a series of films called Small Axe, which I found very uneven. Anyway, he's made a bunch of movies, and some of them have been pretty distinguished. Blitz, the general consensus seems to be among critics that it's not one of his most distinguished works, and I have to agree with that. It's a beautifully crafted movie. It's really, really, really well done in all of the technical respects. It looks great. It sounds great. There are some amazing special effects especially during the opening scene when there is bombing going on and things are really horrifying and that sort of thing. Really, really well done. But on a narrative level, it really doesn't add up to much. So, Blitz takes place during World War II, and it has two main characters, a whole lot of secondary characters, but two main ones. A woman named Rita, played by Saoirse Ronan, and a 9-year-old boy named George, played by Elliot Heffernan, who has never acted before, but he's really, really good. So, what happens is, he is, by the way, is a mixed-race boy, so this movie has a racial dimension, among other things. And what happens at the very, very early stage of the movie is they get separated. It turns out that George, at the age of 9, is a pretty independent-minded and rebellious young spirit. So he is being evacuated from London with his mother's total cooperation. You got to get this kid out of this horrifying situation with bombs falling all over the place. But he actually escapes from the evacuation. He jumps off the train, risking his life in a scene, by the way, that I didn't find very plausible, and then has to make his way back looking for his mother again, who just put him on the train to be evacuated. And that's what most of the movie shows is Rita, the woman, and George, the little boy, kind of trying to be reunited. It's mainly George's struggle to get back to Rita. And we cut back and forth between the two of them. It's what's called parallel editing. We have a bunch of scenes and shots and episodes with George, and then a bunch of scenes and shots and episodes with Rita, and then back to George, and then back to Rita. Rita faces various challenges. There's challenge getting a hold of some work and getting a hold of some money and kind of keeping her life together while the Blitz is still going on. And then, of course, George is a 9-year-old, and he's completely on his own. And he does get helped along the way by some strangers. The kindness of strangers plays a big part in his little odyssey. Particularly, there is a home guard named Ife, a wonderful black man played by Benjamin Clementine. And he is very, very helpful to George. Various other people are as well. And he also runs across bad people. In ways, Blitz reminded me a lot of Oliver Twist. Because, yes, our young boy who is on his own in the big city of London gets taken up at certain points by pickpockets, not exactly pickpockets, but by thieves and looters and people like that. Now, one of the most interesting dimensions of the movie Blitz is that it does not paint this picture of London during German bombardment as being this wonderful unified place where everybody is pulling together. The movie really goes out of its way to show that there is racism and sexism and all kinds of bigotry and prejudice that afflicts various characters to various extents and in various ways. That said, it's not exactly a message to open our eyes up for the first time. Well, gosh, even in cities that are under attack, there can be the problems that were there before and will be there after, things like racism and bigotry and bias. So we have a bunch of that injected into the film, and that's sort of refreshing. It makes this movie different from the sort of wartime propaganda movies, some of which were very good, that were made back during World War II. But it's not exactly enough to give the movie a whole jump to a higher level. The problem with Blitz is that the narrative is just old-fashioned. It's the kind of thing we've seen so many times before, the mother and the little boy separated, trying to get back to each other and having various episodes along the way. It's perfectly entertaining to watch in its sort of grisly way. There's a lot of bombing. There's a certain amount of death and so forth and so on. There's one dream sequence, which provides us a bit of relief along the way. But mainly, I have to say, Blitz is a beautifully technically made movie. As an actual movie to watch and get involved in, it's sort of okay. Steve McQueen has done much better work. He's also done work which I think is worse. And I look forward to better things from him next time around. Blitz, unfortunately, does seem like it's kind of retro, and we don't exactly need it at this stage of the game and our movie-going lives. Next of all, I'd like to turn to a genuine documentary. In fact, I have a couple of them to talk about now. The first one is called Black Box Diaries. And this is a film which is written by and directed by and starring Shiori Ito, a Japanese journalist. And this is very, very much telling her story, and a pretty harrowing story it is. So again, this is a documentary, and all this stuff is very, very real. What happens is that back in, quite a few years ago, in 2015, almost 10 years ago, Ito, who was a journalist just beginning her career, she was in her middle 20s, she was an intern, and she got to go out for a drink with a really, really famous Japanese reporter. All of this takes place in Japan, in and around Tokyo. This big deal TV reporter named Noriyuki Yamaguchi went out for a drink with him. And for whatever reason, she just succumbed to the drink, or maybe something that was put in her drink, and ended up in his hotel room. And she said that she was raped. So she filed a complaint. She wanted Yamaguchi to be prosecuted for raping her. And it turns out that under Japanese law at that time, apparently this has changed since then, perhaps partly as a result of Ito's own experience, under Japanese law, she just couldn't really build a case. There wasn't any case against this guy, because the fact that she didn't consent to this sexual encounter was not enough. The resistance that she would have had to put up would have had to be violent. Well, she apparently was not in a condition to put up a violent defense. And it appears that the whole culture of Japan, at least at that time, was just built to defend men from legal accusations like this. So she couldn't get anywhere. By the way, I should mention this, one of Yamaguchi's close friends was then the Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe. So he was really, really, really connected in very, very high places. So when she couldn't get a criminal case going against Yamaguchi, she went and set up a civil action against him. And she also wrote a book. Remember, she was a journalist. She was a writer. So she wrote a book about this whole thing, which was published way back in 2017. And that made the whole thing really, really public. Since then, though, she kept on trying to get Japanese law changed. She kept on trying to get satisfaction from her own civil case. And gradually, she started to make some progress. So, as the title of Black Box Diaries suggests, this is, in a sense, a sort of a diary film. Parts of it are very objective, where we're seeing news footage and we're hearing her phone conversations with various people, which she started recording, of investigators in the case, lawyers, people like that. But also she keeps her own sort of journals, partly by just talking into her iPhone, and we see some of that. And some of that stuff is really, really emotional and really, really harrowing. At one point, she was actually suicidal, and this is documented again in a pretty sad way. And, the whole movie is very, very harrowing, because it's about this woman who obviously has a real, real case here. The criminal system will not take her seriously at all. Oh, yeah, she does a lot of trying, and all of that is laid out in this documentary. documentary, but then she has to switch to a civil case, and that presents its own kind of challenges. Also, her family is telling her, stop this. It's just too much. Everything's getting public. All of us are being exposed to people's mockery and people who don't think this is a good idea and whatnot. Anyway, it has all of that stuff in it. It's a very harrowing movie, a profoundly feminist movie, and a movie that really, really relates to the Me Too movement, which is still going on and which comes up in the movie as well. The problem with Black Box Diaries, I have to say, is that it's very, very elliptical. That is to say, there are things that it doesn't really tell us. It just sort of hints around the edges. One thing is what actually happened during that awful encounter in the hotel room that set all this into motion. It's very, very late in the movie that we finally get some information about what actually went on in there, just talking about it, and even that is sketchy and vague. Now, I'm not suggesting that it was mild or anything like that. I'm just saying I really would have liked to know a bit more about this. And there are other things that the movie doesn't really fully reveal that I wish it had. It's labeled a diary. It actually is a documentary. And, well, I just wish it delivered a little bit more on all of its details. That said, it's a powerful and interesting movie, a politically very, very cogent movie, and I really do recommend it. It's streaming, and it's well worth seeking out. Finally, one more documentary, and this is a movie called Merchant Ivory, and it is about, yes, the incredibly great filmmaking team of Ismail Merchant, the producer, and James Ivory, the director. There have been a little wave of movies coming out just recently, right now, in fact, about filmmaker documentaries. There was one called Made in England, the films of Powell and Pressburger, about a very, very great team of British filmmakers, and also My Name is Alfred Hitchcock, about the very, very great British-American movie maker. Now we have a movie just called Merchant Ivory, directed by Stephen Soucy, and yes, it is all about the life and times of the great movie-making team of Merchant Ivory. I knew them both quite well. I did a number of public events with the two of them, asking them questions, sitting on a stage, talking with them. I did that a number of times. Ismail, unfortunately, died at a fairly young age, quite a number of years ago, very unexpectedly, while he was having surgery for something that certainly should not have been fatal. So the producer member of the team died a long time ago. But James Ivory is still very much around, still working. He published a memoir just recently, within the past couple of years or so, and he still does some screenwriting and that kind of thing. It's a while now since he's directed a movie, and he's really old, but, well, you never know what could happen. He might come back and make another movie. Clint Eastwood is still functioning as a movie maker well into his 90s. Maybe the same will happen with Jim Ivory. In any case, there's a third very important member of the team, and that is the writer, Ruth Prawer Jabvala. She also figures into the documentary. So we really have a marvelous account of the films of this team. So now, what movies did they make? I have to fill in a little bit of that. I always have said that talking about Merchant Ivory movies is a little bit like the old fable of the person in a dark room or the people in a dark room touching an elephant. And the person who touches the trunk says, I know what an elephant is. It's a long, skinny thing. And another person touches the leg and says, I know what an elephant is. It's a great, big, round thing that sits on the floor. So they all have different opinions. And if one looked at one portion of the Merchant Ivory filmography, we would see a whole lot of movies that deal in one way or another with India. We would have movies like Shakespeare Wala and The Guru. Now, of course, Ismail Merchant was originally from India, and so that makes a certain amount of sense, but that was only one part of their filmography. It's what originally got them really famous and internationally recognized, but it was only one part. They also have made a whole lot of really illustrious literary adaptations of movies by people like E.M. Forster and Henry James, A Room with a View, The Golden Bowl, The Bostonians, wonderful movies for the most part, based on these illustrious works of literature. Then they also have made movies that go in completely different directions. A wonderful movie about the daughter of a great American novelist called A Soldier's Daughter Never Cries. A comedy called Slaves of New York. All kinds of different movies they've made over the years. Very, very versatile, very, very flexible, and not all of their movies, some of them I find kind of dull and kind of boring, but many of them are really, really just wonderful to watch. So One other important fact about James Ivory and Ismael Merchant is that they were gay, and they lived together for many, many years, although neither one of them was monogamous. This was sort of an extremely open secret during their actual careers, especially when Ismael was alive. And in the movie, James Ivory says this, and he said it elsewhere as well, that they had to keep it sort of a secret because people back in India would not have understood about this sort of thing, and Ismael was from India, and he still had family in India. Well, I have never quite bought that, and here's why. I knew them both, and it was just, again, as open a secret as there could be. Everybody who had anything to do with movies in their lives knew that Jim and Ismael were gay, and nobody really cared. So now, apparently, it's no longer an open secret. It's just open. But it's another factor that comes into the movie, and it gets talked about here and there. And we also find out a little bit about the gay sensibilities that played into some of their movie making. In any case, Merchant Ivory, together as a team, made many, many, many films. Some of them are incredibly great. Others, a few, are not so good, and most are at least really, really good. They're wonderful. I hope this movie revives their memory and gets everybody interested in looking again at some of the great movies made by Merchant and Ivory. And so that is my filmmaking kind of story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Blitz, Black Box Diaries, and Merchant Ivory.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.